Hi there. I wrote this story when I was on a writing residency in Virginia in January. And it was absolutely wonderful, apart from the fact there wasn't any swimming pool anywhere near, and I normally swim quite a lot, so I knew that I would write about swimming. It's the same principle as when you sit in your chair and write about going to the gym and you develop a six-pack and lose a stone. I think we know that. And I got a cabin in the woods to write in, which was again fantastic, and nothing to do but write. So I spent quite a lot of time looking out of the window. And about the second morning I was there, I saw this flash of red. And I thought, well, this is jet lag. Am I hallucinating? And then there was another flash. And I went running out to see, and I couldn't find anything. So I was asking someone at lunch, I said, I keep seeing these red things. And they were saying, oh, but they're cardinals, which is the national bird of Virginia, which I hadn't seen, which was the brightest red. So I got to thinking about this and putting it together with the swimming. And I thought about goldfish in a swimming pool, which was how the sort of gem of this story started. And then I put that together with an incident that happened in my childhood, but unfortunately I wasn't one of the good children like Thomas in this story. So this is Potassium Man. Thomas likes to get to the swimming pool at least 5 minutes before the children's session ends. He's not sure why he needs to see how they get more hectic as the time closes in. Splash more, shout more, as if there's a whole lot of playing left inside. Perhaps it's the way they have to let it out, otherwise something terrible might happen, that interests him so much. Today he watches as a small, thin boy carefully swims to the side long before the final bell is rung. He notices how this boy goes straight to a towel that is neatly hung up, not strewn around on the ground like the others, and how he doesn't splash in the shower or turn the water cold to make friends scream. You might not even notice the boy is there unless you find something about him strangely familiar, as Thomas does. Of course, Thomas thinks, this is the terrible thing that might happen. They are all terrified of disappearing into the nothingness of this boy. Thomas eases himself into the pool. He likes to feel that some of the children's boisterousness is left behind in the water. Sometimes he even, so secretly he barely admits it to himself, opens his mouth to swallow great gulps of it. Then he'll kick out his legs, splashing, although he knows this will upset the other swimmer coming up behind him, the one he sees most days because she shares the same strict routine as him, and who he hears counting after each length. 1, 2, 3. She'll get out after 30, he knows, doing neither one length too little or too many. The truth is, he likes to splash her. What he'd really like to do is to go underwater and suddenly appear behind her, beside her, surprise her, do something, anything, so unexpected that he makes her scream. But he doesn't, and even his occasional splashes seem too much. He lets his mouth fall open, as if by accident, to swallow some water now. And that's when he sees it. A flash of orange, and then another. He blinks behind his goggles, and when he opens his eyes, the water is blue again. When he opened the classroom door that time 20 years ago, he was supposed to be coming to his science teacher's rescue. He'd heard Mr. Jones shouting down the corridor and thought that maybe the teacher, like Thomas, was being bullied, and that Thomas could be the rescuer, the person he prayed every night to have for himself. Now he sees the golden flash again, and this time his jaw really does drop. He takes in so much water that he thinks he might have to go to the side for stability. Mr. Jones had looked up when Thomas came in the classroom, but not with gratitude. Instead, it was as if Thomas was someone to be wary of. The other boys didn't notice him. They were too busy crowding round, watching the pool of water in the bowl on the desk, the nugget of potassium the teacher held in his hand. Thomas treads water. He isn't dreaming. There are 4, no 5, goldfish swimming round. The woman swimmer crashes into him, and as Thomas points speechlessly at the goldfish, she starts to laugh. Thomas had wanted to shout at the teacher to stop, to point out how dangerous it was, that there was bound to be an explosion. But if the other boys watched the teacher's hands, Mr. Jones had stared at Thomas. "You're not one of us," he seemed to be saying, as the potassium slowly dropped from his fingers and down into the water. "You never will be, but at least now I will." Thomas is terrified. What if by accident he swallowed one of the fish when he was drinking the pool water? Immediately he feels his stomach cramp as the woman laughs harder and harder, clapping her hands now. The movement of her fingers echoes the flapping inside his stomach. As the chemical hit the bowl of water, there was a bang louder than he had ever heard before. The classroom erupted, and through the smoke it was hard to tell whether the screams were from pleasure or pain. The woman grabs his arm. It's difficult not to notice how naked she is next to him, only their swimming costumes hiding their bodies. They are in a goldfish bowl. He wants to call the teenage lifeguard for help, but the boy is on the other side of the pool, texting on his mobile phone. "They won't survive," Thomas says, "not in this chlorine." "But they're alive now," she replies, "and look how beautiful they are." The teacher's face had been pink and excited when it finally emerged from the cloud that surrounded him. Even with the lines of ash on his face, he looked reborn. "You're a legend, sir," shouted one of the boys. Others pretended to bow to the teacher, who was not looking in Thomas's direction anymore. It was as if Thomas no longer existed. As Mr. Jones raised his arms up, godlike, Thomas shut the door. He ran down the corridor, heading straight for the headmaster's study. Thomas looks at the water. It must have been the children. This was why they were splashing particularly hard here, to hide the fish. Just then, a flash of gold darts by him. He puts out his hand to catch it, but feels it brush against his skin as it passes. It is less a caress than a burn. "You shouldn't have told anyone," one of the boys said in the aftermath, when the repercussions of what they were all calling the potassium incident were still sending ripples throughout the school. Thomas didn't say anything. He carried on not saying anything for the rest of his school days. The teacher left soon after, but his myth grew. Whenever classes got static, the boys would call out for something to happen. "Mr. Jones set the classroom on fire," they would say, and Thomas would try hard not to catch the eye of whatever teacher they were taunting. They didn't want him on their side any more than he wanted them on his. Instead, he played safe and learned how to keep quiet. He withdrew into the shadows, waiting for the moment his mother kept promising would come, when he could leave them all behind and step into his own spotlight. He was still waiting. The woman is pointing out more and more fish. "Here, there, oh, and over there." There can only be 10, but to Thomas it feels as if the pool has become a boiling cauldron, as if the fish are multiplying by the second. He puts his hand on his stomach because the ones he might have swallowed are thrashing inside him now, thrashing both inside and out. He's under attack. He sees his towel hung up on the side. He wants to get out, to get dry and leave before anything happens, to remain alive, invisible, disappeared, but alive. At a dinner party, years after he left school, the conversation turned to childish misdemeanours. "I bet you were a good boy," the woman Thomas brought with him had said. She laughed, and he suddenly noticed that her teeth were too big. It was as if they didn't fit his mouth. He knew then that he wouldn't have sex with her ever again. So with nothing to lose, he told the story of the science teacher's experiment. This time he forced himself not to leave the classroom. And as he watched the faces around the table turn to him, lit up by the candles, he got a glimpse of what Mr. Jones must have felt. Perhaps it was this that made Thomas take over the story with a confidence he still finds unsettling. "Mr. Jones handed the chunk of potassium to me," he said. "I deliberated only a second before I let it into the water." "But didn't you know how dangerous it was?" a fellow guest asked. Thomas smiled. "Of course," he said. "That was the whole point." "My reckless hero," said the woman he brought with him, and as she winked at him, her top lip covered her teeth, and he thought, "Well, okay, maybe just once more." "We should report this to someone," Thomas tells the woman. Part of him wants to hand the tale-telling over. He still feels the silence of those school years somewhere deep inside his body, perhaps in the place where those fish are burrowing now. It worries him that he can't remember making a decision in the classroom about what to do, It wasn't just a case of being reckless or of being safe. Why? She asks. Can it be that simple? None of the other swimmers seem to have noticed the fish, although Thomas sees they all have their mouths firmly and sensibly shut tight. Over the years, he forgot the teacher and became the sole protagonist of the potassium incident. Friends he'd made through his work as a lighting designer called for the story more than he admitted he liked. Potassium Man, they called him. What he enjoyed most about telling it now was how he remembers precisely how the sparks flew up when the chemical hit the water, the acrid smell of smoke, and the way the noise was so loud it seemed to run through his veins. He was right in the middle of the explosion, so close to the fire, so amazed by its power and its beauty that he didn't even hear the door shut, and as an invisible boy ran for help. Why? When he looks back at the woman, he sees her staring at him, and her face seems so alive that he knows this is it, the moment he can choose whether to leave the room or stay and experience what might happen. He's surprised he isn't more nervous. He remembers how the science teacher's hands shook, that even fluttered slightly as the chemical had dropped from his fingers. He'd still done it though, and Thomas sees now it must have been worth it. What had really happened wasn't something that could be enjoyed secondhand. He takes the woman's hand, forgets for one moment that they barely know each other. Let's chase the fish, he says, and he takes the kick of her legs as a yes. They set off, Thomas keeping his mouth shut, he's not completely stupid, and head straight into the middle of the goldfish storm. Despite the stares from the other swimmers, both of them splash wildly as they go, whooping with joy. It's as if they want to let out all the playing that's been stuck inside them. As if, in that moment, they are living. They have become everything that could ever happen.